at chapter 18 and 20. And we're not going to go over there and read that, but you can read it sometime on your own, because I'm referring to just two chapters here, so we're not going to read two chapters. But if you look through there, there are things that are related to the exposure of the nakedness and the shame of it. That certain things are they, when they're exposed, this is a shame, there is nakedness involved, and this is, well, what's nakedness? If God hasn't defined it, then where does that person know when they have violated that law? I think God has given some guidelines to know, so that these laws, even in the Old Testament, can be understood, to know what he's talking about when he talks about that shameful exposure and nakedness. We can know what modest is by learning what shameful nakedness is. We learn what God says about if you expose this, it's a shame. Okay, then that means cover this, which he has said would be a shame to expose. The Bible comes to us with direct statements about certain issues of morality and things related to our morals in the form of modesty. But it also comes to us with an implied contrast. What I mean by that is, when we look and see what God has granted the marriage couple to enjoy one another in that physical sense, in that sexual relationship, that he has said this is proper and good and there is joy in this, it's implied to take it out of that would be wrong. So we can take a positive thing, look at the opposite of it, and we can gain more information of how God describes those things that man does that is wrong. In Proverbs 5 and verses 15 through 20, we'll not look at that, we'll read it a little bit later. But it describes the relationship of a man who would enjoy the pleasure with his wife, taking that same joy to someone who's not his wife. And it's night and day. One is right and one is wrong. So you see the contrast. Obviously, if it's not within what God said is okay, then it's going to be wrong being taken outside of that relationship. Both in the Old and the New Testament, the entire Bible can be used, since nakedness is a natural human trait that has never changed. Adam and Eve were not amoebas and evolved eventually to us today. They were humans like you and I are humans. And so these things have not changed. Go back to the patriarchal and the Mosaic and the Christian as we divide up these ages. The human anatomy and psychology and all, that hasn't changed. It's still the same. You go back to Judah and Tamar in the Old Testament. David and Bathsheba. Amnon and Tamar. Jesus in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 28, talking about looking on someone to desire her or lust after her, has committed adultery with her in his heart. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, the man who was living immorally with his father's wife. You see, that part of man is still the same as it was in the beginning and at the end. So, when it comes to how God looks at that part of man and his moral attitudes and choices that he makes, we can gain a whole lot of information from how he looked at it in the Old Testament and the New Testament, because that's how man is, and God would legislate how man should live to please him. Look in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 6. I have it on the board here. Now these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. Here is a New Testament writer writing in the first century, referring back to the Israelites, how they were wandering in the wilderness. They had violated God's law and they complained and they gave into lust and desire. And so Paul says this here, that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. So we're talking about an element of humanity and human choices and the way God sees that, no matter what dispensation, Old Testament or New Testament, that we're dealing with. So yes, we can use information from the Old Testament to verify how God thinks about the human relationship. Where is God's line? Did he draw a line? Where is that line of shameful nakedness and modesty that we are talking about? Well, let's start with the beginning. In Adam and Eve's day, they, of course, were in the Garden of Eden. No, they were both naked and not ashamed. There was no shame there. There was no sin. There was no evil in the world. Evil came into the world. Shame came into the world with that, and so they tried to cover themselves. Well, they covered themselves in one choice that they made, but in God's eyes, they were still shamefully unclothed. Yes, they had something on, but it wasn't what God would want them to have. Genesis chapter 3 and verses 6 through 10 and verse 21, you can read that. You probably know the account where Eve sinned and Adam and Eve sinned and they hid themselves. But their choice of clothing left them shamefully naked before God. And so God made clothing for them. According to the way the words would be defined in that, it would be like a tunic worn next to the skin, generally with sleeves. The tunic came to the knees, but seldom to the ankles. God made, in that case, a permanent design for men and women to cover that part of the human body, as we see this definition of the tunic. I realize we're going to the definition of a word and what the scholars would say would describe that, but I think we can come close to those lines. The lines of shoulders and knees in Genesis 3 is consistent with other passages that describe that which when exposed is called shameful. And so we can know then what God would look at and say, you should not expose this, it would be shameful, you keep this covered and things are just fine. Whether we talk about nakedness in the Old Testament, you run across this, in a literal or a figurative sense. In other words, God may use this idea of the shame of nakedness, and he's really talking about a nation as a whole. Not describing necessarily their being unclothed, but describing their shame. Whether we're talking about that literally or figuratively, God still gives us insight into the way he thinks about the human body when he talks about that shame that he associates with a national shame. We'll see this in a few verses as we go through some examples. First of all, thighs. Thighs. Let's talk about thighs. That part on a chicken, I like that because it's pretty meaty and I like dark meat. That's a thigh. It's above the drumstick. So if you can understand what a chicken looks like, then you kind of understand what I'm talking about. The Levitical priesthood had specification on the covering of their clothing, their garments. In Exodus chapter 28, verses 42 through 43, they were to make trousers that would go down and cover the thighs because nakedness was considered the exposure of the thigh, and they did not want that kind of corruption in their worship and among their leaders or their priests. In chapter 20 and verse 26, there was a lot of emphasis on the fact that nakedness does not need to be exposed because that was the way the people around them were. They were wicked and immoral, and Israel needed to stand out with that purity of preservation of that nakedness. We find another example in Isaiah 47 verses 1 through 3. And incidentally, I meant to say this in the beginning. If you're following the outline, you may see there are a lot more scriptures in each point than what I have here, and because I didn't figure you brought a lunch to eat and we go through all of them, you see. So you can study those on your own. It's a little more of the research is done and left with you. So maybe you'll have trouble keeping up with me if you're trying to go through all of it. But follow with me in the lesson. Isaiah 47 verses 1 through 3. Isaiah was prophesying about the fall of Judah and the fall of Israel as well. But he takes the time to describe those who were the enemies and how they would fall or how they would be shamed before God. In this, in verse 2, it says, "Take the millstones and grind meal. Remove your veil, take off the skirt, uncover the thigh, pass through the rivers. Your nakedness shall be uncovered. Yes, your shame shall be seen." Now, whether or not we understand what he's talking about here as far as describing a nation in this matter, we do understand what he thinks about the human anatomy and what is shameful to expose and what is not. And he wouldn't use that illustration if it wasn't shameful. So it must be shameful if the thigh is uncovered and exposed in the way he uses it here in the illustration. You know, the knee is somewhat of a natural, visual, psychological break in that section of the body. The more the thigh is exposed, the more the imagination begins to think about what's above that. when the miniskirts came out back in the 60s and 70s. And those cycle, they come and go, and next thing you know, they're going to have skirts dragging in the mud. But then after that, they're going to be short again. It was a challenge for young men not to think about what was above that. The leading. If a skirt was down to the knee and covered the knee and covered that part of the body, it was less likely to think that way. The higher the skirt goes, or pants, or whatever it is, the more the intensity of imagination goes. That's a fact. And maybe women may not understand that, but men do. That's a fact. So why was it so important they covered the thigh? Because the fact is, exposing that part of the body with its power to attract, and it's a good power in a marriage relationship, has a bad power outside of that relationship. For documentation, ask any normal, honest man. And he will tell you, yes, that's true. That's true. That would be the case. A Christian trying to do what's right finds opportunity to escape that situation, averts his eyes, looks another direction. But our society doesn't think that way, and so it just feeds this concept of desire. The next description we have in the Bible is the hips, or what would be called the midsection. In chapter 2, or rather 2 Samuel chapter 10 and verse 4, one of the neighbors of David, King David, had died. And he was going to send some presents or express his condolence, you might say, to the son, the man's son. His name was Hanan. Hanan was the son of the king. And the Ammonite king, Nahash, was the king, and he had died. And so David wanted to pay tribute. He sent men to Hanan for that purpose. Hanan interpreted it as spying out his land or some way to infiltrate his domain there. And here's what Hanan did to David's men. Therefore, Hanan took David's servants, shaved off half their beards, cut off their garments in the middle at their buttocks, and sent them away. These men were greatly ashamed. If you look in verse 5, David told them to go and go to a city until their beards grew out. That was a special designation for their honor. And so we have here a description of the middle part of that body when exposed is described as being ashamed to expose. Isaiah makes a point about that in Isaiah 20 and verses 2 through 4. The exposure of the buttocks is shameful. In this case, it's Egypt's shame. So shall the king of Assyria lead away the Egyptians as prisoners and the Ethiopians as captives, young and old, naked and barefoot, with their buttocks uncovered to the shame of Israel. He associates that with shame. There is shame in exposing that, in emphasizing that, in showing that to draw attention. The third area would be the breasts. I prefer to call it the chest area, the upper body area. A woman's breasts are to give pleasure to her husband and not to other men. And the cleavage of breasts is an attention drawer for the wrong reason. That's popular today. It's all around us. And when our eyes are drawn to that, then we have to make a decision. But that is an extension of that attraction, of that part, which in Proverbs chapter 5 and verse 15 through 20 tells us that is a pleasure for the husband, not someone else. And the cleavage is a part of that pleasure. So keep that in mind. Keep that in mind as far as what God's idea and attitude says about that. Looking at some things in regard to places in the scriptures that describe shame when that is exposed or that which is emphasized. It says in Ezekiel chapter 23 and verse 3 and verse 8 and verse 10 and 18 and 21, and you look at all of those, and a similar expression we found, they committed harlotry in their youth, their breasts were their embrace. The focus of attention was on that part of the body. And it's in a context of the shame of that exposure with that part of the body. And so you find here that when the chest and the hips and the thighs, when these things become the center of attention, and they are drawing in the eyes and the focus of attention here, they can excite sexual desires. And whether it's for good in the marriage relationship or evil outside the marriage relationship, those elements of the human identity have great power to cause someone to desire. It's foolish to argue that God has not drawn a line here. However, God's idea of modesty is not an extreme idea, covered from shoulders to the knees. Even in our corrupt society, we look around today where people either are ignorant or naive or intentionally wearing things that expose more than they should. Even in our society, there's a recognition of a certain amount of decency of a person who will cover themselves in the areas that we have described already. Shameful nakedness, how does it appear? Well, don't feel like you're fixing to be shocked, but we're just going to talk about things that people do that show their shameful nakedness, and they don't think they're doing that. The first thing you want to consider is bodily movements, how a person moves their body. Even one who is fully clothed can have a body language that will be suggestive to draw attention to them for the purpose of creating the image of that shameful nakedness. Whether it is intentional or whether it is in some way choreographed because it's a part of a program or some activity. For example, dancing. The whole idea of dancing is that if you had people on a dance floor and they stood like this, well-dressed, and didn't move, probably not a whole lot's going to happen. There's not going to be the stirring of thought, but a dance floor doesn't work that way, at least in our society. There are going to be movements, there's going to be a closeness, there's going to be a familiarity that will be created. All that can cause a person to begin to think the thoughts they shouldn't be thinking. When we think about some of the activities that young people can get caught up in, cheerleading comes to my mind very quickly. Those who choreograph those dances that cheerleaders do are not Sunday-going, God-fearing, faithful Christians from following the Word of God. They don't design those things. And yet, those who may practice in them, they may be good person in themselves. Their parents are good people. And my little darling will have an opportunity to be able to show and be a part of some activity or some club or group. And the part of the activity is to do the things that will draw attention for the wrong reasons. Cheerleading is one of those things. The provocative walking, movements or poses or they can cultivate the image. What it does, even when one is fully clothed, they're sending the signal, I want you to think about me when I'm not. To stir those thoughts. So we've got that part of man's habits that we see around us. Did you know that hand and facial gestures and suggestive words and the way someone looks has power to draw attention to that? Look in Proverbs 5, 6, and 7. We're not going to read all those, but I refer those to you. As it talks about the lips and the eyes that would stimulate sensual thoughts. That's what we see in the writings of Proverbs and the danger of that. Tight-fitting clothing. A person can be fully clothed and yet expose their nakedness because the way they're clothed looks just like they would look without being clothed. Just different color. It's like you've been spray painted or something. A different color. It still sends those signals out to others. The idea, and I may be already old-fashioned, of skinny jeans. Men and women. Tight-fitting jeans. They call them skinny jeans. I think that's right. And forgive me if I'm just out of touch with the vocabulary here. But I think you understand what I'm talking about. It is hugging the body in such a way as it exposes the nakedness of the body, even though the body is clothed. And then you have some who have in their mind it's okay to wear a short skirt as long as they have tights or leggings on. Again, forgive me for the vocabulary, but I think you get the ideas. And some wear those leggings without the skirt. And the form they portray is that of nakedness. Yet they feel like they're okay by that because they've got cloth on their skin. I think if you stop and think about what we're dealing with here and stop and think logically, we're going for the idea that the when we expose that nakedness, whether it is actual or whether it is covered, when we send out that signal, then we can cause someone to sin. Here's another one, special occasions. Here we go. Special occasions. That doesn't change sexual desire in men. Men don't think occasions. Ungodly men ignore the occasion. Sometimes people will say, well, yeah, but that was on a special occasion. And so the special occasion called for a special kind of dress. Now, men don't bother with that. They'll look at what they want to look at, regardless of the occasion. So keep that in mind. Say that men, it's more so the way a man looks at a woman than a woman looks at a man. But ungodly men, they ignore the occasion. Godly men figure out a way to turn their heads or get away from the situation. It's not that they don't see it, and it's not that they don't recognize it, but they do recognize that it could be powerfully dangerous, so they choose to walk away from it. But this occasion concept here, the strapless low-cut formal prom, on this occasion, the people can dress in such a way, not counting the dancing part of it, just dress in a certain way. But it's okay because it's on this occasion. I'm disappointed from time to time when I see someone that I thought pretty highly of, and it's a young person, and they decide to get married. The bride decides to get married. She gets a dress that exposes the top part of her body. Exposes something to everybody else before she has a chance to share it with her husband. And yet it's the occasion that justifies it for so many in their way of thinking. Athletics, or maybe in a drama class, both for males and females. Sometimes Christians will just really brag about the gymnastics in Olympics and the diving team and the swimming team with these people that, you know how they dress. They are exposing and gyrating in the presence. Occasion doesn't mean a whole lot to the mind of a man. If he has that opportunity and doesn't have any scruples, he'll watch that with thoughts. If he has opportunity, he won't watch it start with. These are things that we need to keep in mind. It is exposing that idea of nakedness, so we can use the illustration of swimming. Well, what's wrong with a bikini? Nothing, because it's swimming. The occasion makes it okay. But wouldn't wear that anywhere else. Why? Because it's shameful. But swimming makes it okay. We've got kind of twisted thinking about how we justify certain types of clothing. Don't let anyone talk you into surrendering your marriage treasure. When, especially young people that are requested to wear a certain type of clothing for an event in school, and it exposes much of their body, don't let them talk you into that. What they're talking you into is sharing that marriage treasure you're supposed to take to your spouse. You're sharing it early. You're sharing it with someone else. Or, in the case of many situations, you're sharing it before an audience of thousands of people, before that relationship is created. Short and revealing. I think this is an obvious one here. I don't have to spend a lot of time on it. Sometimes people just, some they think, well, as long as I'm not provocative, I can expose my body in maybe a short swimming suit or something like that. As long as I'm not provocative, I'm going to tell you something. Bare skin is provocative. You don't have to do anything. Bare skin that shouldn't be showing is provocative in and of itself, all by itself. And then anything else, of course, would be more provocative than that. But preserving this special treasure in this marital nakedness, this is the issue. Trying to preserve that. I want to spend just a few minutes talking about people who object to these things we talk about. That preacher. Not everybody lusts for me when I wear that. Many will. What about those? Many will do that. Have these people asked everybody, gone around and said, does this cause you to lust? Does this cause you to lust? Does this cause you to lust? To be able to say, not everybody. Or are they mind readers and they know what everybody's thinking so they can get away with it? What if that person who is wearing this that is questionable goes and asks a person and says, does this cause you to lust? What's the guy going to say?